Before you go, tell me, what about Vera's dream? What was the reason for that? We had a plan. It was a good plan. Jenny wanted to go where her baby was. She couldn't FMD her baby, so she'd go find a pregnant body, and I went with her. The dream sometimes, if you are frightened, upset, sad, sick, it's easier for us to get into a body. Was Vera ordinarily too strong to be entered? Yes, admitted Cold. I placed a protective capsule of light around Vera and her baby, to protect her from entities like you. But now you are not Cold anymore. Why don't you choose a new name for yourself? With sudden childish eagerness. Cold said, that's what I was thinking about all along. That's what I want, a name. After a moment he decided he wanted Homer. I knew a guy named Homer once. He was kinda dumb, but he was all right. All right. Then hold out your hand to the guide. Homer, trusting the guide, goodbye, Homer. Goodbye, thank you, that's a good word, too, isn't it? I'm not very Cold now, a little, but not very. I should perhaps have worked more on this residual chilliness and may recheck on this at a later session. Now Jenny. You didn't want to sacrifice babies, did you? 258, slowly Jenny answered, I never did do what I wanted to, ever just what's easiest to do. I don't think I ever did anything good to anybody. My parents were good to me, maybe they spoiled me, maybe I made them happy. You are honest about yourself, Jenny. It takes courage to look honestly at yourself and see your own selfishness and weaknesses. It takes courage to do what is good. But there's a thrill, a sort of breathless feeling like an adventure, when you are brave. So you have honesty and courage. Now what about Vera's dream? You wanted a baby, so you wanted to frighten her and make her open, so you could push into her body. Is that the reason for the terrible dream? That's part of it. I didn't know if it would work, but when her baby was born I'd take its spirit away. To where? You'd take away the baby's spirit, let the body die, just take the spirit. I haven't figured that out. I was in the water a long, long time. Then I came out and looked for someone. I couldn't find my baby. Jenny, are you sorry for the past things you did? Are you sad about them? She said, MHM, if you never did anything good to anybody, maybe it was because of the dark heavy things inside you, like selfishness, cruelty, dimness of mind. Jenny, through Charlene, put her hand to her forehead, now just put out of you those dark things, put out of your brain the dimness so that your mind is clear, calm, cool. Put out of your heart the anger and hate. And now can't you see a light? And see someone coming for you. She saw a light. She saw someone more than one person coming. One is kinda like my mother. One is kinda like me. Only two coming. Others are around. Ask your mother about your baby. It's her grandbaby. 259, she says, yes, yes, yes. Her face looks like she's glad to have me back. She says, come on back, now. Before she left, Jenny gave advice for other pregnant women. They need to rest and keep in good health. Stay strong. They need to follow the doctor's advice. They need to be happy and have love. Love will help. They mustn't be afraid. Thank you, Jenny. Now goodbye, have a happy journey. Goodbye, thank you. Vera had no more trouble of this nature during pregnancy. Although the delivery was difficult, the child is healthy in all ways, as is her younger brother. A comment is in order here about human beings who at any time in any life become devil worshippers or make contracts or bargains with the darkness. Often such bargains are made either as a game, an adventure, by teens or older persons, or in a moment of terrific pressure, of despair, or of helplessness. After that moment of crisis has passed, the human being often thinks little of the bargain, may forget it entirely. But the dark ones do not forget, and it appears that they take such bargains as irrevocable contracts on the part of the human being, and keep hounding the soul lifetime after lifetime. This pattern has appeared in several cases that I have had. Even some persons who in the present life are worthy, respected citizens, healers, counselors, and so on, may be struggling still under the weight of ancient bondage to the darkness, in physical symptoms that modern techniques seem unable to alleviate, or in emotional or mental ways. The soul needs to be completely freed from the old ties and is eager to do so, but the darkness is by no means willing to let a former slave be freed and will obstruct in every possible way, often in sly, tempting ways. 260. The attainment of freedom from many former ties to the dark side needs to be a deliberate choice of the person's free will, a definite, emphatic command to the dark beings to withdraw permanently, and an equally urgent call to the beings of light for assistance and protection. The aid of a therapist or a group of friends is of immense help as well. First rules concerning the dark path for all who in ignorance are attracted. 1. You call to yourself and increase in yourself the dark forces and energies, such as malice, anger, hate, resentment, hostility, jealousy, and also fear. 2. What you send out to others is what you sow, and what you sow, that is what eventually you will reap for yourself: injury, misery, fear, ill fortune. 3. Strong as your own power may become, there are always still stronger white powers which can overcome yours. Therefore, no matter how mighty your power may become, it is eventually destined to fail. 4. There is always a point of decision. No matter how far you have gone on the downhill path of darkness and arrogance, you may still make a choice between going farther on the left-hand path or stopping and turning around. 5. If you decide to continue as before, you have deliberately turned from the light, and in front of you is a dark shadow, your own. The shadow brings confusion and uncertainty, your steps are not sure. The shadow also brings delusions of grandeur. The shadow seems huge as your own picture of your powers, your own swollen ego. 261, 6. If you decide to turn around, you forget yourself and your shadow. You think of the brightness, the change, the different and wonderful feelings of peace, openness, and love. You may have a long way to go back, but the important thing is the change of direction. You are now heading up again, seeing the light as a beacon, feeling its warmth, comfort, and protection, moving toward it. 7. If you turned around, you are no longer on the path of darkness and you are ready for the first rules of the path of light, which begin: do no harm, bargain with the bright ones, will they wait for me? Can I just stay here till I decide? When I suggested that he ask them, he said, they answered, no, not forever. Then, in a high childish voice, he asked, can't you just leave me here and come back later and check? I wouldn't go. I'd stay right here, just on the edge. He relayed their answer. That wouldn't accomplish much. He did go close enough to look into their eyes and see their expressions, a bright, bright light, but it didn't hurt. Dot. They may want to help, might have been that they want to do away with the hurting, but he did not go close enough to hold out his hand to the bright beings. And I repeated that they never came to seize or grab anyone, they waited for pride to make the first move. The channel felt very much confusion in pride. He doesn't want to go back to the darkness. He's not quite ready to go forward. I described to pride the halfway place, a round bare room lined with mirrors where you will be alone, no one will bother you, alone with yourself, seeing only your own self. And you can think, in a weary murmur pride said, I am thinking, I couldn't do whatever's good, whatever's bad, on which is which, I don't know, but I wouldn't be doing either good or I wouldn't be doing either bad. There was still more hesitation, but finally pride chose to go through the door into the round room. His voice, starting out very small but growing stronger, sounded rather sad. All right, pride, and as I said, it's not forever but only until you figure out what to do. Anytime you call for the light, one of the bright beings will come and free you. You 274, do understand, pride, that the only way out is if you yourself ask for the light? He said he did. All right. Then goodbye. You go with my good wishes. Goodbye, thank you. In a barely audible murmur did you say, thank you, Pride? Is that what you said? Pride grimaced, paused, not really. No. I had to laugh a little. Well, Pride, I am putting my hand again on Charlene's hand and you can feel it. I thank you for your thanks and you can feel my sincerity. I thank you for your gift. Now as I remove my hand, it just draws out of you any secret things you want to have gone. I don't need to know what they are and I'll just shake them off and they will fragment into a harmless vapor. Confusion, for one thing, and selfishness, and indecision. There was a long pause. I'll come back and talk to you some other time. Goodbye. Then there was quietness. I considered it a promise that I had made, and in meditation I have once or twice spoken to Pride. As for Bart, he is no longer in that high position, and he seems more relaxed. Satan chooses death. Jill is the adopted daughter of Kay, who is channeling to discover why the relationship between them is so unpleasant. Several of Jill's past lives were contacted in which she had been a member of a satanic group. At the end of one life in which she did a lot of damage was wicked, malicious, romped around, spiteful, harming this one and that, she died unrepentant, invoking the devil, cursing God. In the next life Jill was a woman in Palestine, the mother of a child who was Kay. This life for both mother and daughter was 275, uneventful, absolutely routine, as chosen by Kay's soul. I'd had such a really turbulent, wild, exciting, outside of law series of lives as seer and magician, as pirate, as zealot previously, that I was a little tired. I entered a life of conformity as a self-discipline to tone down the sense of being above and beyond law. I had been a zealot in Palestine, was killed, crucified in 63 BC, eventually entered Palestine again real fast in 230 AD. I was Jewish. I wanted some beauty, a girl's normal wish for something romantic. All was dreary, drudgery. The wedding should have been one of magic and beauty. There was little enough even then. Never any poetry in that lifetime. I suppose I held that against my mother, that witch's thing is still hanging on. Kay placed her two index fingers together in a steeple. It is the sign for protection out of the old wisdom against demonology. I interrupted to ask, do you mean that she laid a curse on you? The answer, through finger movements, was yes. I invited the beings of light to beam their protective light on Kay, to wash her aura and clear it of the murky taint, and eradicate the smell of fear and neutralize the old curse. Then I asked if we were to send the curse back to its creator. The curse is washed away as if down a stream, said Kay. It is neutralized, no one else is affected. It was created long ago by a dark entity. I myself had the wisdom to dispel the curse long ago, but I'm accepting present help. I had power by myself, but I might have been proud, so I had negative feelings about Gil. I'm so angry and judgmental, don't want to be. I asked Kay's higher mind if Jill is still a member of the satanic group, and Kay's voice said, I think yes. My lips are quivering uncontrollably. Boy, is she involved with a wicked spirit. Somebody is manipulating her with all its power. The Jill I know is a mask. She herself isn't there. Boy, I don't like what I'm seeing. I'm hearing a clamor, get her out. Kill her. It's not my higher mind. Kay gave a deep sigh. I called for my spiritual advisor, for the Christ spirit, for the white light to shine on us and asked, is Jill possessed? Are we to exorcise her? I assured Kay that the great ones are backing us up and asked her to tell me what she saw. Boy, am I afraid? I am assured that we are quite safe. My other children and I are indwelt by the Christ spirit. Jill can dwell among us. We can pray for her and contain her. I see a vision of a wedge of light in which she can rest. There's a possibility of redemption at all times. We create for her a container in which she rests. We don't redeem her. We are undamaged and will go on with our lives. After I am gone, my other children will continue to pray for her. I asked, Is today the right time to help Jill? Is her opportunity now? It was Kay who answered, yes, let's. And so I called Gil's higher self and asked that it begin to reevaluate mentally Jill's past lives and present activities. Kay murmured, I think she's possessed, I see a spirit within her, I see strongly a cradle of light. She will be healed, even if not in this lifetime. Jill herself and it's like this other had made something to end well. My Jill is to be saved from them. There are two, the one is sleeping. Is it our responsibility to call this entity in Jill and talk? Yes, Jesus, Buddha, other beings of light, please come. I sure hope you know what you are doing, wavered Kay. You are protected. We have the backup of these great ones. I am calling the entity who is in Jill. What is your name? Without argument came the name, Marie. Asked how old she was, she said, ages, ages. Asked what country, he answered. The light will heal him. There was a pause. I had to calm Harry first. He felt the pain of the Dark One. Focus hard on Thorvald. Bring him into the center of this group, in meditation, and fill him with light. He is unnerved right now. Surround and fill him with that light and send him peace. Do that now. We did so as I led a guided meditation, asking also that Harry's body be renewed with all the strength he needed and sending our blessings after Star. Harry brought himself back to normal consciousness. Then we sat around discussing some of the points of the session. Very strong dark beings are usually difficult to persuade. They may escape, they simply leave and break the contact established with the facilitator. Harry's channel was able to confine the Dark One within certain vibratory limits and prevent the Dark One from moving freely and making an escape. Harry was also able to prevent the Dark One from telling lies and saying that all its darkness had been dispelled. Its shape was something like an object with corners, and it was keeping bits of darkness hidden away in the corners. It wanted to retain those bits as seeds for its very life. It truly felt it would die if all its darkness was dispelled. Harry felt that the Dark One was genderless, neither male nor female. This Dark One was focused on power and the control of Thorvald. Others are focused on other things, such as their assignment. For example, to confuse a victim's mind, to cause the victim suffering, as a from cancer, to stir up discord in a family, to produce despair and suicidal thoughts, etc. Most say they were able to enter during a moment when the victim was in great fear, anger, or pain. Before this demonstration, Harry had asked me, do you 286, believe that there is a spark of light in every creature, in every Dark One? I had answered seriously, from all my experience with releasing Dark Ones and other beings, I can say that I truly believe that there is. I have come to be convinced that there is a light in every creature, human and non-human, like sparks of the one original light. After this experience as a charmel, Harry said, you told me that you believed that there is a light in every Dark One. I don't believe I know. Yes, and I consider the Dark Ones as just prodigal sons not yet returned home. That's what they are, prodigal sons, agreed Harry. This case was first printed in the Journal of Regression Therapies, Volume 8, Number 1. Jack has rage, Bicky has both, and the boss comes. Bicky sat quietly, describing her problem. I'm not consciously suicidal, but I have had a serious drug problem. Began to drink when I was 5, had an alcoholic mother once considered suicide, slashed my wrists when I was 12, overdosed on drugs lots of times. But for this past 12 years or more, I've worked hard to unravel this dark thing, have been completely off drugs all this time, but sabotage is right behind me. Since I was a baby, I've wanted to die. I have memories of being molested and other traumas. I explained about invasive entities to her and suggested that we find out first of all whether any of her problems were not really her own. Although the idea was unfamiliar to her, she was willing to try this approach. 287, her yes finger said there was an entity in her. There was a slight hesitation before the second answer, no, however. Sometimes this is significant of one nested in the first. The entity I called out said his name was Jack, that he was 24, that he had been attracted to Bikki when she was only 2 because she was sexual, and so beautiful. He tried to hold her, but did not enter her until she was about 6. I asked, "Did you cause the dreams she had, or the feelings she had as a child that she had been molested?" He did not reply. When he went back to the last time he was in his own body, he told about being with a very beautiful dark-haired woman. "She's a stranger in the distance that I admired. She knew how I felt. She rejected me by being aware of my attraction. I got really angry and rage. I strangled her, took all of her life out of her. Then I kept the rage, the impulse to take more life. I felt bigger, wronger. Expecting to find a dark one inside Jack, I asked him what he saw when he looked into himself. A really scared, lonely man," he said. "Focus on the rage, the impulse to kill," I directed. "What else do you see inside?" There was no answer until I asked again, when he said, in a flippant tone, "I'm seeing my cock. Mom." This was not Jack's voice. "Rage, I'm calling you out. How old was Jack when you entered him?" His answer, along with the murderous rage when sexually frustrated, had convinced me that a dark one was here. Rage said that he had entered Jack when the boy was 10 and had been caught masturbating. The lad had been shamed by members of his family and had felt great shame of his own. It was this feeling, not the masturbation itself, that had 288, opened the lad to invasion. The dark one said yes, its own sexual characteristics were similar to those in Jack. He would not say whether he had a boss. Ignoring his silence, I asked, "What if you disobey your boss? What happens then?" "He won't love me anymore. He rejects me, he walls off." Yes, he had been assigned to Jack. And, no, he was not happy. And, yes, he nodded, he would like to be happy. But in the center of his heart he saw a black hand. Only after more discussion did he perceive, in the very core of his heart, a little round ball of light. Now he was willing to accept that once he had been a child of light. "How do you feel now?" I asked. "Overwhelming joy," was the answer. With rage transformed and gone, I turned my attention back to Jack and asked what he saw now in his heart. A heavy voice proclaimed, "The boss has come now." And after the session, the client said that his thought was, "And don't you F with me." But she refused to relay those words. I wasted no time in trying to persuade this strong dark one. Instead, I asked for great sheets of light to pour down all around this dark one, forming a net, a capsule of light around him, and light to protect the rest of us from him. I called for the Christ Spirit and the Father of Light to draw away this one and remove him far away from us. Light is always stronger than darkness. Then I asked Jack's higher self if there was a message for Jack's lower self. The higher self replied, "He needs to forgive himself. Yes. And Jack, you need to ask forgiveness of the lady you killed." He nodded. "What do you want to say to her, Jack?" Almost mumbling he answered, "How sorry, I really loved her. Did you ask her to forgive you?" "She loves me, too," he said. There had been a past life connection between them. I suggested to Jack that he use a whisk broom to clean himself up and he was sent on to the light in the company of the woman he had killed. Afterward, Bikki admitted that the woman had teased Jack, and that she herself had sometimes teased men. This is a common, but not universal, game that certain young women like to play and a dangerous game. Bikki also commented afterward on the boss. "He was powerful but he was helpless in the net of light and was suddenly shot clear away when you asked that he be removed far away." She was happy and smiling at the end of the session. In this case, Jack himself was obsessed by rage, so that both were in Bikki, obstructing her personal efforts to control her life. Now she is free of their influence and in a later session will deal with her own remaining problems. /O/IN/I/E of Jerusalem. Several times I have said that I accept just what the entities contacted during hypnotic sessions tell me. That is not strictly true, for I'd use common sense and test the information with my rational mind. so far as I can. The following case will illustrate. This entity was found in 1985 when I had not long been in professional releasement work. It was in a middle-aged, birth-injured, unemployable man with dyslexia and severe emotional retardation, though with good but patchy intelligence and a phenomenal memory. Several unsavory entities had already been released from him. Checking to see if any more remained, I said, after inducing Sam into hypnosis, "If there is any other entity in this body besides Sam himself, please come out and tell me your name." "Johnny. I'm a little boy 7 years old, and I want to be in his body, 'cause he's a nice guy. I don't want to go." This much talking is unusual, for entities ordinarily answer direct questions briefly and then cease. Johnny said he had been hiding while the other obsessing entities were being discovered and released. He insisted that they were the ones who had been making Sam do things that he would not do himself, acting foolish so that Sam got ridiculed. Johnny said he didn't do much of anything. Then I made my first mistake, saying, "Johnny, you had a body of your own once. What happened to it?" Could I really have made that flat statement? That is worse than asking leading questions. Johnny with gusto began to tell a story filled with discrepancies. "I was eaten by a lion. I was a Christian boy in the time of Christ. I was a little boy in Jerusalem and Christ cured me of being a cripple. A Roman soldier took me to Rome and then they threw me to the lions." Johnny is hardly a Hebrew name, the term Christ is of Greek origin, and the term Christian was not used in the lifetime of Jesus in Palestine. And what boy of seven calls himself repeatedly a little boy? The fingers said that there was no other entity remaining in Sam, so I continued questioning. "Now, Johnny, go back to the moment just before they threw you to the lions. How were you dressed?" Johnny hedged by talking about the clothing a Jewish boy wore in Jerusalem, sort of toga style, with a shawl over my head. He did not know what the shawl was called. "Returned to the moment before being cast to the lions," he said. "He was in a cell type of deal with bars on the door. They'll club me over the head first before the lions start to eat." He said a Roman soldier had told him that. He seemed to vacillate freely between Jerusalem and Rome. "Are you confused, Johnny? You said you were in Rome, then you said you were in Jerusalem." Not missing a beat, Johnny agreed, "Yes, it's a very confusing thing for a boy of seven." Asked what his father's name was, he said he'd have to think about that. Then, "I think his friends called him Samuel. He said he was mum of a handmaiden, so I don't think my mother had a name." Pressed on this point he said, "Seems like it was Rebecca. He did not know his last name, just Johnny. I had a Hebrew name but I am unable to pronounce it." At seven he could not pronounce his own name. All these discrepancies should have warned me that a sly dark one was here, but I kept on as if Johnny were really a difficult child. "Go to the moment when your spirit leaves your body, Johnny, just tell me what happens." Usually this wording brings out the feeling of relief and freedom of the soul that has escaped from the body, not with Johnny. "I see lions eating my body. It's a gory sight." He added more details. "Seven lions, all of them chewing on me at once," he finished with relish. "Again I tried, then after your spirit was out of your body, what did you do?" "I cried spiritually. I didn't want to die that way. I thought I'd find another body and live in it so I could die naturally. I wandered for centuries till I found Sam's body. He was 5 years old, I don't want to leave him." I continued to lecture him gently and finally asked if he saw a light. He 292, said he saw it, and he said he remembered seeing his father and mother go into the light, but "I wandered for centuries," he repeated, "until I found an adult body I could go into." I pointed out that he had said he had entered Sam when Sam was only 5. I asked if he ever told lies. Without hesitation he admitted, "It's a possibility." When I pointed out other discrepancies he only said, "I'm too small to know." "Oh, no, you're not. You know perfectly well what's right and what's wrong. You caused Sam to get confused yesterday about his past life, and it was you who made him get confused about a lot of other things, so people would think that/Z tells lies.